Accession number 32715, Reel 1.
Then I'm on a diet and you put me by all this food. Larry knows me well. I know Larry well, too. We go on the same chapter, EAA, both home builders of sorts. I probably got started interested in aviation, but same as most of you, except probably a little earlier. I was a small boy in Lindbergh. Flew the ocean, and my dad had bought me an official Lindbergh hat and goggles, and I was flying all over the neighborhood. Built the same model airplanes. Some didn't fly. Most didn't fly at the time, but I dreamed of flying. And so when I got out of high school, I won a scholarship to the University of Chicago. And then my dad was a surgeon, but I was supposed to be destined to follow him. However, I went to college primarily to get 2 years so I could get in the Air Force. That was my dream. And around that time, I was 17, had come into Midway. I went and drooled all over the place, and that was one of my inspirations. Well, I took and I applied for the Air Force. After 2 years, I got my associate degree at the university. And O'Hara wanted me to mention that while I was at the university, I was working full-time as a campus policeman. And I got to go into every building at the University of Chicago to find old mall. And one day they strapped down a .45, big hog leg, you know. And I'd had training and I had an expert rifle and a pistol, so they knew I could handle it. And I said, "Well, what's this for?" They said, "Well, we want you to keep the kids out of the West Stands. The West Stands of Stagg Field." They said, "Well, what's in Stagg Field?" "Oh, no, just keep the kids out." I thought about it in a 45 kid. Well, these must be some damn kids. So I walked around at night, and I was over all night. I got out in the morning just in time for 8 o'clock classes. And I walked up and down the hall. Stagg's, the field's long gone. There's a memorial there now. And they had little handball courts, and then there's a big supply room. Well, I went in and out of the handball courts, which now had 3/4-inch ply benches set up in all of them. And they had oscilloscopes and every type of electronic gear you could think of. Well, then I walked into the supply room, and then they had some old carpenter hand-cutting carbon bricks. They were perfectly cut, and they made a small room out of them. Mm-hmm. And I'm going in and out of this room, wondering, what in the hell is this? I was walking in out of the atomic pile, see? Well, then, later on, piled around it, you know, and it was all covered up. And they tested the first atomic release. I was in the other room. And they didn't know if they could stop it or not. And I'm glad they did. But I had the privilege of meeting all the scientists, Oppenheimer and Fermi and all of them. And they were charming men. Men of that caliber usually are nice. It's they don't put on many airs, and we used to have lunch together, and that was it. But right about that time, I was going into the Air Force, and I took my flight physical and my regular one, and my mother didn't want to let me go. So she wouldn't let me go. So when the draft came around, I said, "Well, I'm going to get drafted. I want to go into what I want." So, okay, I took it all over again, passed the written. And only this time they said, "You can't get in." I said, "Why? You're colorblind." I said, "Colorblind? I saw the wrong number on the issue our chart." Well, so I said, "What do I do now?" They said, "Well, why don't you go into glider corps?" So I took the test, which was much simpler, and I passed. And meanwhile, I went back to school, and I studied Ishwara's life and his theories and all. And I found out what his basic principle was for these tests. You know, you see the number. Well, if you have normal vision, you see a 5. If you don't, you'll see a 3, see. And I study this test, and I can see both of them. So. But I didn't have to go through that. I went to glider corps. And it was a wonderful opportunity because I don't know if any of you remember Washington Park Airport, which is on Harlem Avenue, way south. There was a big grass field there, and there was a a place across from Glenwood Manual Training School, and we were assigned there, and we had our ground school at the Thornton High School, and then we did our flying in a tandem. I had a tandem Taylor craft, and they had side-by-side Taylor crafts, and I got my, about 50 hours of flying, and we got our private pilot licenses, so we were pilots. So then I was transferred to Okefenokee, Oklahoma, and that's where we had our free glider. And it was interesting because we were flying Lazon airplanes, say, Roncas, tandem Roncas. And the thing I learned there was they fly us up, it was a big grass field, and on the middle was a park bench. And what we had to do is come over the edge of the field and cut our switch off, and then side slip down, land, and roll up to the bench without using brakes. But, well, you got pretty proficient at it. Remember the first time the instructor says, give me a slip. I gave him a slip. He says, no, this is a slip. And you're looking out the side window, and that's where you're going. So I later had occasion to even slip a fortress, so I'm not quite a side slip. So we were there, and all of a sudden they were getting more people killed. The Germans had everything all set up, so if you came in with a glider, you were just about dead because they had these set up traps for all the airplanes. So you dropped the glider core. They did use some gliders in the invasion, but they were a little further in, so they felt they were pretty safe. So what do we do now? Well, they send us all to Tent City outside of Kelly Field, Texas, and all of us were there. Some fellows, I was went to Canada to join the RCAF. But one day on the mess hall, they had the bulletin board, and five men report in. And I went in, and by God, there was a take this test. It was the same test I passed twice before. So I passed that again. And then I went to the, went in, and they didn't have the issue warrant knocked out more pilots than the all our Air Force, because more fellows were kicked out because of colorblindness. I might add a little something here, too, getting ahead. When I was flying over Germany, I forget it was near Leipzig, I looked down and said, boy, look at that phony thing down there. I said, what? I said, well, don't you see the big factory there? And they got roads on the roof, and they got cars and trees and everything. They said, that's a camouflage. Nobody could see it but me. So I reported it. I got the navigator finally off his butt to find out where we were. So we reported it, and what they went back and bombed it. It was a big factory complex. And they gave me a Hasselblad camera, and every time I was supposed to see something like this, I had to take a picture of it and record where it was. So the color thing helped a little bit. So what happens? So I was at Tent City, and they were saying, well, they'll release us and we get drafted. We don't know where we're going. But I passed the test this time for cadets. Well, we're right outside of Kelly Field, and all the cadets with those big wing hats, you know, parading inside, we drooled, you know, oh, that was us, you know. Well, one day, we were moved across the road into Kelly Field. We're now cadets. Wow, what a thrill. So I was in class 43K, and the second lieutenant, well, we could have killed him, told all the cadets that were 40J, our upperclassmen, to take and try to wipe out as many of us as we could, as they could, you know. Well, they gave us a hard time. I wasn't this heavy then. They had square meals, you know, and then, boy, for about 8 days we didn't eat. They kept us going. And it was the eighth day, orders came through, since there were 75 of us, we were pilots, and they were short of pilots, we were promoted to 43I. Now, we became our upperclassmen's upperclassmen. Can you see the fur that flew? Well, they got us there. Got there in 2 days. So we went directly to flight school and went to, I was assigned to Avon Park, Florida, to the Embry-Riddle Flight School. And there were two fields there, so part of our guys went to one and we went to the other. And we flew steerman there. And after about 8 hours, I was soloed. And it was fun. It was, you know, the steerman is 70 up and 70 down. It was climbs about as fast as it goes forward. But we took and that's when I took and had a cold, and they gave me some codeine terpenhydrate. I am allergic to codeine. I broke out, complete rash. And they said, you have measles, and you're going to... They quarantined the field, and they threw me in the hospital. Next day, my measles were gone, but I was in the book for measles, so I could have stayed for measles. That's why I started writing to my girlfriend at the University of Chicago, my present wife of 52 years. And we took and corresponded, that's where we got started. But then they let me go, and then they rushed me through. And then I went on to Cochran Field, Macon, Georgia, for BT-13. That was the Vulti Vibrator. It was an interesting airplane. My interest, Lieutenant Claffio said, you got to practice spins. Every time you go up, two spins, you know. Well, I must have done about 25 spins. I'll tell you, sometimes that damn airplane wouldn't come out of it. I did everything. Canopy, motor, everything, you know. Oh, boy. And luckily it came up. And then one day on the bulletin board says, you'll only do two spins with your instructor because we're losing too many pilots. Wonderful. Old Claffy was wonderful. He gave me my first the spins. He was in the back. And we do the spins and, you know, pull out violently. And about a minute later, I hear, he passed out every day. he said, I'm sure glad you get out of there, because I never said you'll recover once yet. We had another lieutenant there that was really funny. One of our guys was very proficient. They were doing instruments, you know. and the instructor was in the front, he was in the back. And the instructor took and... this kid was really good, and he came in, and the instructor fell asleep. He was doing instruments, and so he said, well, the heck, I don't want to wake him up and get hell, you know. So he landed the airplane, he taxied up by the hangar, he got out quietly, walked in, signed in. The instructor woke up, looks around, and the propeller's sitting there. He jumps up and bails out and broke his collar. Yeah, we had one guy come in the VT with a big hunk of branch sticking out of the wing. And he said, what happened? He said, I hit a bird. He said, well, hell, you didn't have to go in the nest to get it. that was exciting. Well, that's the first time we learned with flaps. We had to crank them down. That was exciting. Come over the field and not going to make it. Well, boy, they didn't go straight down. You're going to make it. Oh, that's right. And so we learned that. We learned controllable pitch props and the basic instruments first. Then we went on after that to Moody Field, Valdosta, Georgia. That was our twin engine training and our instrument training. And it was. I loved instruments. I still do. And so we flew there. The one I was mentioning, someone, the one thing we had, I enjoyed navigation and flying. Every time I went on across country, I always had somebody following me. You know, they said, why should I navigate? I was so So the one hard thing we had to do, boy, that scared the heck out of me, because we had to navigate 500 miles, and then we had to take and find our field, and the field was blacked out, and on each end of the runway were these little smudge pots, you know, by holes, and in the center was a smudge pot. We had to find this field without any lights or anything, come in and land on the field. Well, I'll tell you, that was scary. I was the first one there, and I come in, and I don't know, oh, boy, you know, is this a field, and what is this? You know, one heard the wheel squeak, you know, and I said, oh. Turn on the lights, and then all the planes started coming in. It was fun. But I took, and I had our instruments, and once you passed the instruments, you were a pilot. You didn't fly anymore. You know, a lot of fellows were washed out then because they didn't pass the instrument check. Well, Lieutenant Miller was my instructor, and he had five students, and two of them, his Cracker Jacks, sent him up for checks, and they didn't pass, and then I was the third in line, and he sent me up, and I had just been to Link that morning, and he put me through a lot of rough stuff, you know, and flew a perfect thing, and I went up, and Miller loved me after that, because they had about a $500 pool. It's the who student gets there first. Well, I was the first student to pass. He almost kissed me, you know. And, so after that, I sat on my cot, and everybody, lucky SOB, you know. Then they fitted us up with the uniforms. You know, we were tailor-mades. That was a thrill. I love the old pinks and greens. You know, I think these new things are, the blue are horrible. Like, I was at the demo convention, one of our generals was at the Stevens, and somebody says, "Say, boy, we get those bags?" Pass the bags and patron. She gives him a couple bucks tip. He said, "Look at that." I didn't like the uniforms. So we got through that. And then I was got 2 weeks off, courted my girl back here, and then I went to Hendricks Field, Florida. And that's we had the stripped-down B-17s, and I'll never forget my first night flight. I'm going, and I'm turning, and what do you know? I said, "Did you see the airplane?" He said, "Hell, that's your wingtip light, you know." Way the hell out there. But, we had our part, too. We got our cross country and stuff, and I'll never forget. I had the urge to, when I was at primary school, I'd see the 17s up there, you know, and I'd fly and try to get near to see one, and say, "Oh, heck, I'll have some fun." So, with my crew, this was before I had my crew, went over to my old field, and I found my field. So, I came down to about 2,000 feet, and here's the fortress at 2,000 feet. Well, there's a young man in the steerman had his silk scarf out there, and he was green, and I pulled in formation with him. And I mean, I was about as far as I could see his eyeballs by the wall there, you know. I had the wheels down, the flaps down, the cow flaps open, I had everything. And I was just about stalling, and I'm in formation with him. And he's casually going, "The eyeballs got his feet. Wait!" To this day, I'd love to see that fellow. Then all of them saw me, and they're all going to take and shoot me down. So I poured the coal on, closed up the shop, and straight up, you know. But we had our fun sometimes too. And so we had our the fellows from Tampa. They were flying B-26s, you know. They'd clown around and come in, call in, say, "Coming in on two engines." Jeez, we got the fire trucks, and also B-26 come in on two engines. we checked it. Our airplanes were so light, they had no turrets, no guns, no nothing. You know, so they were like a cub. So I took and checked out the airplane. We were supposed to go for some time. And I said, "Hey, Chief, this inboard engine is crossed, red crossed." He said, "Oh, fine, you can fly with three engines." Mm-hmm. Well, so we did. We called into Tampa. B-17 coming in on three engines. They rolled out the trucks. So we parked the thing, went to the officers' club, had lunch, came back, called in, we want to go. He says, "Aren't you going to get the engine fixed?" "Oh, we fly like this all the time." So we took it. We went, and from there, we all put in for RTU, replacement training units, where to get our crews, see. And I put in for California, Arizona, everything. So they gave me Avon Park, which is a taxi ride from Hendricks. It was about 10 miles away. So we went there, and just before we met our crews, we had about a week off around Christmas, and couldn't get home, so we all took and went to West Palm Beach and got a little high. Oh, did I get high. And we came back. And I was the first one they called up for my crew. They introduced me. They had a platform. Introducing me to my co-pilot. My navigator then was a guy named Hall, who they soon after had an appendicitis attack. They gave me another one. And so I met my crew. First thing they said, "I got to take you all to checking in." So they gave me a slip. We went in. And the first thing they had was shots. We had to get our shots. Well, I'm going, one guy shoots me here, and this guy shoots me here, and he shoots me here, this guy shoots. So I walk and go, boom. That was the only time in my life I ever fainted. The engineer was part Indian voice. "Sir," he says, "you do this often?" I said, "Only about twice a week." they'd watch you, and they'd say, "Boy, I always bounced, you know. Ever since my first flying, you know, it's hard to say, so you always bounce, but got a beautiful recovery. First time I flew the crew, I bounced a little bit. Look at that pilot you got. He bounces you. But when we went to the gunnery, they tow a white target around. They had their bullets crayoned, you know, with their own colors, and they shoot at the target, and then they take it down to see how many times they hit it. They never hit. I said, I'm the only guy that I used to beat them all in skeet shooting and everything. I said, I could beat you guys all, but I'm the only guy that doesn't have a gun. I said, learn how to do it. So we met the crew, and that was about the time my navigator got sick, and they gave me another fella, and he was all for killing those Germans for what they were doing to those Jewish people. And his name was Henry Block. Him and his brother Robert started a little outfit called H&R Block. And he was the worst navy. One mission, I'll just tell you, I'm going to write a book and get a copy. For $50,000, I'll burn it. But we were flying over Germany. All of a sudden, the left side, the oxygen system is going way down. Well, we hadn't been hit by flak or fighters. What's going on? So took a walk-around bottle. It was good for about 3 minutes. And walked around. And there was old Henry sitting with oxygen on emergency. Well, the only time you ever did that is if a guy got wounded, you try to recover it, you know, get him back on his feet. So you put it on emergency. Well, I turned it on regular. I said, what are you doing? He said, I have a headache. Well, my vomit there, Bill Green, the Irishman, pulls up. He was going to shoot him and throw him out. I talked about it. To this day, the IRA guys that know that I knew him wish I had thrown him. Oh, he was marvelous, our bombardier. And I'll never forget one time, you know, we had the guns forward. That was so we could get guys coming in head on. But most of the time, the damn guns were frozen. You know, the turret was frozen. And they couldn't do much shooting. So one day we're coming back, and he was trying to get the thing exercised, and it caught on fire. And I said, what's on fire? He said, never mind. I said, what's on fire? He said, the turret. So I threw the master switch off, and shut everything down. So all my crew was waiting to bail out, you know. And finally, I threw the switch off for the turret, and put the rest on, said, hold on, we're okay. And he says, I got an invention going to save the Air Force a fortune. I said, what's that? He said, I took two extinguishers on that damn thing. And that last time he yelled, he said, I took the pea can and I threw it at him to put it up. He said, that's what they're going to use from now. That's what I threw the switch in. So we got our crew, and we practiced. We had our fun. Like one time we saw about six P-47s flying low altitude. And low altitude, they were very sluggish. They needed an escort to get up almost, you know. Well, I got behind the last one. I'm flying around. They were in trail. They were flying around. Here's a fortress in back last one, keeping up with. The CO will call us and say, get the hell out of here. We're trying to demoralize these guys. So we got our flight training, and then the word came we're going overseas. So we went to Maxwell Field, Alabama, first stop. And then we went on to New York. And that's where we went over on the Queen Elizabeth, which was quite a lovely trip. And on the way, we're in Florida, and the train stopped. And I said, how long did we stop? He said, about an hour. I mean, they were loading oranges in one of the places there now. I went over and I said, the fellow says, can I buy some oranges? I said, it'll be the last time we'll have some. He said, where are you going? I told him, we're going to the 8th Air Force, England, you know. Whoa, a truck pulled up and they put cases of oranges on the train. All the way to New York, it was all orange peels. So they were wonderful to us there. So we were in... We got out of the boat and went across. And when we got to England, it was full of troops. And the ship went so fast that a submarine didn't have a chance to hit it. Maybe got one chance in 1,000, so we were pretty safe. And we pulled into Scotland, and there we had the kilting band, you know, bagpipes and everything, greeting us, walking up and down the platform. And they put us on GI trucks and took us to our bases. Well, we went over as an Olsen group, but they had lost so many men that they split us up and put us in different fields. So I ended up with about three of my buddies, and others were, I was in the 95th bomb group, some went to the 100th, which was, I had quite a reputation. And so we took and they assigned us, here's your barracks, your Quonset. Everybody was crying. And they said, well, you know, they were taking all the clothes out of the thing and putting them on trucks. And he said, well, what's going on? And they said, we sent 7 airplanes up today and 5 were shot down. Oh, was that right? They told us that we had 80% survival rate and 20% fatality. Turned around the opposite. We had 20% survival, 80% fatalities. So we, they all wrote letters home, oh, I'm dead, give my stuff to Joe, so and so. Well, I was eager to be, I had a sensor to mail, and luckily I read all their letters and took them back, and I cheered them up. Oh, come on, you know. I felt worse than they did, but I was trying to cheer them up. So they wrote different letters, less serious. And so then we went on to our practice. Well, here we come out to the field, and first I went up with an instructor, one of the pilots, checked me out. And I looked at the airplane, and here's the darn thing is, what I've been flying was an empty airplane. And here's one with a ball turret, a chin turret, top turret, guns. I said, wait a minute. He said, how do you fly this? Well, I just take off 10 miles an hour faster and come in 10 miles an hour. That was all. Yeah. It was like a real truck sometimes. Especially when we were on long runs, they put rubber lining in the wingtips and put in 1,000 gallons in the wingtip. That was the Tokyo tanks. And you take off, and I'm telling you, that airplane didn't want to do what you wanted it to do. You were praying. We lost a lot of airplanes on takeoff, and it was really a shame. But so we were indoctrinated, and then finally they came up, my first mission. We took off, we were flying, and had full, we had 500-pound bombs and tanks, not the Tokyo, not the main tanks. And we got in the air, and we were flying away from the field. And the radio all went out. You know, my first mission, I thought, you better, that's not so good, you know. So I turned around, I aborted. They always carried an extra airplane in case somebody aborted, they'd fill in. So I came and landed, and I'm coming in. And my bombardier and my co-pilot were Catholic. And I'm coming in on the approach with all this load, you know, we didn't have time to empty it up. And my co-pilot's going, you know, across it. So, not on my landings, Cal. Come on. He said, well, if you screw this up, I'll never talk to you again. The airplane lands, boom, and stays there, you know. But we survived. In fact, we flew about 6 missions where we didn't get credit because we came back with bombs. And to get credit, you had to be hit by flak, by fighters, or drop your bombs. And on a couple occasions, well, one occasion, we had to fly up to the North Sea and drop our bombs in the water, in the ocean, because they were time bombs. And we couldn't set them up ourselves. So we took and we aborted, came in. Well, the next day I had the privilege. We're going to Berlin. Our group was the first ones that went to Berlin. And they went there by accident. Well, actually they take the glory, but what happened is they got up there and they're going on and didn't get the recall. So they went on to Berlin, bombed it, came back and got the presidential citation. First ones to bomb Berlin. Well, that was that scared the holy hell out of me. We got to Berlin, and when you dropped the bombs, the airplane went, several hundred feet up, because you dropped all that load. 6,000 pounds of bombs, a lot of load. Well, so we took and we get to Berlin, and I'm reading my gas. I'd used 2/3 of my gas. I say, well, let's see, 2/3. That don't sound so good. with the lighter load, we'd make a steady decline. You know how you get your airplane up to speed, you know, and you're coming down a little bit, and you pick up the speed, you can throttle back and all that. That got on. Well, we'd get back to England about 60, 70 gallons in each tank, which was, we had engines quit actually coming in sometimes. But so we took and... That was our second mission. I got a list of the missions we flew, but then we took and we bombed targets for Churchill, the buzz bomb sites, went down to southern France and dropped parachute supplies to the Free French that were fighting. We had one guy wanted to kill over Paris. Son of a gun took a salvo in his load, and there's parachutes coming down, so they knew where we were going. And we survived that okay.